Michigan, like every state in the country, divides its population into legislative districts. These boundaries are designed to congregate about the same number of people into each district to ensure equal political representation. The Michigan legislature draws the state's House and Senate districts based on census data acquired every 10 years. Congressional districts are created in the same way. A case now before the U.S. Supreme Court could change all that. At issue is whether legislative districts should be drawn according to the total population as it now stands, or based only on persons of voting age. The Citizens Research Council of Michigan has been studying the possible effects of just such a redistricting change here in Michigan. Joining me now to talk about it is President of the CRC, Eric Lufer. Eric, welcome back to Current State.
Thank you for having me back.
This issue stems from a U.S. Supreme Court case that originated in Texas, and it was argued back in December, Evenwell versus Abbott. What's exactly at the heart of this discussion?
Well, I think the heart of the discussion is something unique to Texas and many of our southern states that we experience to minor effects here in Michigan, but not nearly to the same extent they do down there. They have large numbers of immigrants, some legal, some illegal, and when they drew the lines and put these people that are challenging this into districts with a large number of people who can't vote, they felt that their representation, their ability to affect policy change was being unfairly affected. And so they challenged this, and they haven't had much luck, but they did push it all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Indeed, it's gone all the way to the top, as it were, here. If the Supreme Court does overturn the Fifth Circuit ruling, and it does allow what's the acronym here is CVAP, Citizen Voting Age Population, CVAP. What kind of impact would we see if the High Court overturned the Fifth Circuit ruling?
So that was kind of the root of why we wanted to look into this. We weren't making any value judgment that this was worth change or not, but this is something that clearly would affect representation. Stands, as you said, to affect every state in the nation. So we dug into it, and what we found is that while Michigan has a population of about 9.9 million people, its citizens of voting age population is about 7.7 million people. So clearly a subgroup of our overall population. And to be clear, when we talk about citizens of voting age population, this is kind of a surrogate measure for what they're trying to get at. To be a citizen, you have to be at least 18 years of age. You have to either be a naturalized citizen or have gone through and become a citizen. And so there, you also take out the people who have been incarcerated and aren't eligible to vote. So you weed out a number of people, the young and the immigrants, things like that. So you get to this smaller population, about 7.7 million people, and then when you start looking at where they are throughout the state, it doesn't vary to a great extent from our current districts, the way they've drawn them to try to create as equal representation as possible. But there are some districts where there is significant variance, and what we found by looking at this is in order to fix those few districts that are far off, you're going to affect either all districts or a great majority of the districts, because in order to grow one, you have to borrow from another.
Exactly.
To shrink one, you have to expand another. It's kind of the population. If it expands, something else it has to give to allow it to expand.
It's interesting, though, because one of the few districts that would be notably impacted is our very own here, as I sit here in East Lansing, the 69th House District, that Sam Singh's district. Sam is the House Democratic floor leader. What's happening in the 69th? What would happen in the 69th? And what is it about the demographics of our district that's relevant here?
So we didn't dig into great extent, but I think given what we know about East Lansing, having the university there, having populations from other places coming to attend Michigan State University. We know that they're usually coming legal ways, but they're usually not, or, you know, then they're still not eligible to vote. So the district would have to contract to, it would have to expand some to pick up more population so that there's a greater number of citizens of voting age population to
right.
equalize that. And I think what's common here with some of the others that we found is these districts tend to be in the urban areas of our state, in Detroit, in Oakland County, in Lansing area, in the Grand Rapids and Muskegon area. There's a commonality there. And so East Lansing kind of stands out as being unique for the reason having the university there. I think in the other places, there's a number of other reasons we can look at.
What about Michigan's 14 congressional districts here? Would you see any significant change to our seats in Congress?
What we see there, while the legislative districts are drawn to be close to a target, they pretty much nailed it with our congressional districts. There's zero difference from the target as of 2010 when they drew these lines. So by going to this different measure, you're going to have difference from the target. The greatest difference is about 4.5%. And so that may or may not fit into a level that's equitable that they're willing to live with. But every district, every congressional district would be affected in one way or another if they tried to get that back to zero variance.
We're talking about a case before the U.S. Supreme Court that would potentially change the way voting districts are drawn across the country, and it could mean Michigan would have to recalculate its districting system to reflect the voting age population rather than the total population. Eric Lufers with the Citizens Research Council of Michigan, which has recently written a study on the issue. Virtually all of us understand what gerrymandering is. We learned the term back in school. It refers, of course, to manipulating a district's boundaries to favor one political party over another. Would a rule change be a deterrent to gerrymandering? How would those be connected?
No, we don't think to be connected, that you're still able to draw the lines to favor one party or another with this ruling. What this would do, I think it would have some minor effect on which parties are being represented, and maybe make it a little more difficult because there is such a concentration of these districts in our urban areas. So the overall effect, I think, is negligible in doing anything about gerrymandering.
Did the support and resistance to this become apparent to you? Were there patterns that emerged as far as who supports a move like this and who opposes a measure like this?
It's a little beyond the scope of our study, but we did notice that when we were doing the research. And because these urban areas are the most affected, the question of representation, it tends to be the Democratic Party that's in these districts for the most part.
Okay.
So they've tended to defend the status quo, and it's the Republican Party that's pushed this down in Texas. I don't want to extend that the Republican Party everywhere is feeling this way. So that's what we found.
Understood. Okay. Eric Lufer is president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. We have been talking about CRC's report, which studies the potential impact of a pending U.S. Supreme Court decision that would impact redistricting here in Michigan. Eric, we'll have to watch and see what comes from the High Court. We thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.